This is the Bread and Roses Show. I'm Marlise.
And this is Carol.
Hi. Tonight I have pre-recorded an interview with Vashti Bunyan. I will give you the background of Vashti on the interview, but I think you'll really, really like it. Afterwards, you definitely need to go and check out VashtiBunyan.com, V-A-S-H-T-I. There will be music and Vashti's story, which is really very interesting. And at half past the hour, Carol?
So after this wonderful story of Vashti Bunyan, whom you will just be impressed by, she proves you're never too old to rock and roll.
That's right. That is a good point.
After that, we'll be talking with some great community activists. We'll be interviewing the doctor and coordinator for the new free health clinic in Northeast Portland. And this is one of those instances where, hey, government is not filling in, and people got together to put together a free health clinic for residents of Northeast Portland. So you'll want to hear that. It's two inspiring stories all in one evening.
Absolutely. Thank you, Carol. And now we're going to go to the pre-recorded interview with Vashti Bunyan, and I invite you to listen to her wonderful music and enjoy. Thank you. The following is an interview with Vashti Bunyan. Vashti came through Portland a couple of weeks ago on her very first tour. She made an album over 30 years ago called Just Another Diamond Day, and the album was inspired by a horse-drawn carriage journey she made from London through Scotland for 2 years. She wasn't satisfied with the reception the album had gotten, so she went on to have a family. She eventually raised 6 children, and she lived in a lot of different countryside farmhouses throughout Scotland. And lo and behold, one day, many years later, she was Googling herself and found out that the album had actually become quite popular, not only in London and England, but also in the world. And she came through to the KBOO studios and graced us with an interview. And she talked about her creativity, she talked about raising children, and she talked about the wonderful second chance she gets to fulfill her dreams at the tender age of 60. I'd like to start the interview with a song from the album. It's her title cut, and it's called Just Another Diamond Day. Enjoy.
Of London to the islands off the west coast of Scotland. And in North American terms, it's not very far. It was something like 700 miles, but it took nearly 2 years. And it was the result of my failure as a pop singer, because that was something I'd wanted to be for all of my young life. And I wrote songs and I did some recordings, but nothing happened. And I got very upset and dejected by what had happened to me with the music business. And so I ran away, but I ran away with a horse and cart. Took 2 years doing it and wrote some songs on the way, which then became an album of songs called Just Another Diamond Day. And nothing happened to it, just the same as had happened to my musical career up to that point. And so I gave up entirely. I gave up music, concentrated on my children and my dogs and my horses and my partner. He comes right down the list, doesn't he?
So you recorded the album,
mm-hmm.
and then you went to...
I went back to live in the Outer Hebrides, which was the islands that I had been heading for with the horse and cart, but didn't stay there very long because I wasn't allowed to keep the horse there for all kinds of reasons I won't go into. But it ended up with going to the west coast of Ireland, with going back to Scotland, with living in all kinds of rented farmhouses and different places for a long time, 15 years, until we found a place of our own eventually.
Is this with your children?
With my children, yes.
Did you get married?
No, I didn't. I stayed with this same person for 22 years, and we had three children together, but we never married. We both had the same kind of dreams of self-sufficiency and getting away from what we saw as a completely senseless world in 1968-69. And we did achieve it after a while and after a fashion. But not in the way that it sounds as if I achieved it on the album. The album was a dream. It was dreaming of what might be ahead and the kind of life I would ideally like to live, with my children being sung to in front of a beautiful hearth at night and wonderful farmhouses full of home-baked bread and all of those dreams. And I guess we did kind of make it like that, but not really.
Before we go any further, I'd like to play another song from the album, Just Another Diamond Day. This is Vashti Bunyan with the song Window by the Bay.
I wish I had a window over the bay and a black horse grazing on the green all day. I wish I had a well to draw my water from and a warm log fire for when the summer is gone. I wish I had a window over the bay and a flock of white sheep to watch from where I lay. I wish I had a little boat bobbing on the deep and a big wooden table all laid out for tea.
Isn't it, living in the country and being self-sufficient? It's not as easy as it might seem.
No, and it was hard work, but also it's very hard to live a perfect life. And the songs were about a perfect life. And also they were written in 1968, before I ever had any children. Yes, and before I realized what incredible minds of their own they would have. And that directed my life in a very different way. And I have no regrets about it. And they are all wonderful, wonderful kids. And I'm very pleased, in a way, that I didn't have a successful musical career. It's only when my last child left home, just 18 months ago, that I was able to do what I'm doing now. And it just seems crazy that it is still like that. That, well, you have children, mm-hmm. and you're thinking about where are they now and who's looking after them, who's going to be able to look after them if I want to do something else. And it's universal, and it hasn't changed in all this time.
Are you surprised when you say your album didn't really go anywhere, nowhere at all? I have to disagree with you strongly, Vashti. Here, 30 years later, I listen to your album, and so do my children. The songs bring us to a place where I would love to be with them. Are you surprised that you are back making music again?
All these years later. Yeah.
Does it scare you? Does it feel natural to you?
What really scared me was that when my last child went away to college, in fact, he came to America to go to college, so I didn't see him for 8 months. And when he came home, the change that he saw in me was quite shocking to him, because I really wasn't there. In my head, I had completely changed my life, because I wasn't having to think about whether the fridge was full, you know. And the washing baskets and all of those things that just completely take up such a large part of your mind. And I so admire people who can do both, and I think I was never able to. And people ask me, well, what did you do in those 30 years? Well, I brought up kids. And that says it for me, but for a lot of people it wouldn't. And I had three of my own and three stepchildren, latterly.
Oh, that's a lot of kids.
Well, yeah, we brought quite a lot of them up to adulthood. And they're all big people now, but of course they come home and disrupt my life again.
Did you ever meet them on tour?
Yes. Yeah, my oldest son lives in Los Angeles, and he's been there for 16 years, and he's about to have his first baby, so that's going to happen while I'm here, which is another wonderful, wonderful thing that's happening to me. So I feel very blessed.
Beautiful.
Mm.
Many people throughout modern history have had the goals and the dreams of moving out of the city and back into the country, back to nature, and becoming self-sufficient. Your life, for many years, embodied those ideals in so many, many ways. Do you still hold true to these ideals, or have you let them go?
Well, I moved back to the city 12 years ago, mm-hmm. and that completely changed my life, of course. And it did feel like giving it up, like giving up those ideals of self-sufficiency, and I feel like I've done an awful lot of damage since I came back to the city. And in this last year, my God, the plane flights that I've taken, you know, I'm going to have to plant an awful lot of trees one day. But yes, I feel that I've left a whole bit of myself behind. I feel as if I made the album And I did try to live that life, but an awful lot of other people lived it much more honestly than I did, and more carefully than I did.
How would you compare that?
I hear from people who know the album and who sang the songs to their children, and I never sang them to mine. And I think that's the big... That draws the picture for me, you know. And people say to me that their children love it, that they go to sleep to it, that their babies go to sleep to it when they're troubled. And I think, well, I never did that. It's as if that's a whole other part of me that I gave away almost and carried on with a sort of normal life. And sometimes I feel quite bad about it, but it's as if when people meet me, they still would like me to be in an old long dress with a little apron, and that was me, but it is a long time ago. And very, very gradually I moved out of that, and my life moved on. And I do feel sometimes quite a bit of a fraud because of this album that is out there that represents something that I so believed in when I made it and still do believe in, but I don't live it. I didn't sing to my children. I did make them bread.
So your children never heard the album while they were growing up?
Well, my daughter told me quite recently that she and her brother used to take the tape from the back of the drawer where it lived, because I didn't have an original copy of the album. They used to take it out to the car, which was the only place where we had a tape player, and sit in there secretly and listen to it. Because they got the idea that I didn't want them to hear it, because every time anybody put it on, I would take it straight off again.
And why did you do that?
I thought it was rubbish. I thought, I think because it had such a negative response the first time around, I believed myself that it was no use, really, that it was not worthy of being listened to. And also, now I realize that the feeling I must have had was just a complete hurt that nobody had listened to it, and that it was such a personal document, and yet it just got sort of trashed when it came out. And so it must have hurt me. Now I realize that it did, but at that point I just thought, no, it's rubbish, I don't want to hear it, and I don't want anyone else to hear it, especially my children.
Yeah. Rusty, I'd like to take a break and play another track from Just Another Diamond Day. It is called Lily Pond. Is standing, she's a young woman standing in the doorway of what looks like an old European farmhouse, and she's wearing a red kerchief, and she has long braids and a white apron, And along the side of the album are painted horse and a cow and two dogs. And it's a sunny day. Actually, it looks like another diamond day. And while she was living in the farmhouse for many years, her album was circulating throughout the London, actually the world music scene. And here's what she said when I asked her how she kind of found herself out.
Idea. It seems like somewhere on the internet I read, you know, one day you were Googling yourself or something like that,
yes.
And then you came upon and then you found all this stuff out or mm-hmm. something.
Yeah.
Is that true? Is that
it
how
is.
That happened?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was very weird. And it was because when I moved back to the city, I got the feeling that I really should explain to my children about their earlier lives and about the music and all of that. And so I got a computer in order to write down the story for them. And so I got onto the internet. And it was pre-Google.
Pre-Google.
Yes. Yeah. But I did put my name in and all these references came up to Diamond Day and to other recordings that I thought were completely lost.
What year was that?
96.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, it's 10 years ago. Feels like yesterday. But, yes, it was the most wonderful opening up of a box that I'd left behind so long ago. And I found all these amazing things in it and music that I hadn't heard for such a long time.
Vashti, let's talk about your new album.
I think, for me, it's like the two albums are bookends. The first album was very much looking forward and full of dreams and was very optimistic. And the second album was very much looking back and trying to make sense of those 30 years. And I think that they have great similarity in them, although that there's such a lot of distance in years between them. They do speak to each other, and I feel now that I can leave that second one there and move on and do something else. And but I like to look at them side by side and think how much there was in between the two of them, and what a big life I had in between the two of them.
This next song is called Wayward, and it's from your new album called Look Aftering, and I think it's a really good example of what you're talking about now.
Home to find me sitting.
How did you feel when you put an album out after so many years? That must have been an amazing feeling.
I think I must have grown a thicker skin, but I was very frightened, as I said at the beginning. When the second one came out last year, I was terrified that it would have the same effect on people, that it would just be too personal and too close to my own life and not mean anything to anybody else. And because of the way that Diamond Day has been so embraced by a completely different generation and completely different people and such kindness, really, I thought maybe I should just leave it, because it made its life all by itself. Maybe I should just stay completely hidden and not show myself to be a real person who doesn't wear an apron. But then I got this incredible chance offered to me to do all the music in the way that I'd always wanted to do it.
Vashti, how has your attitude towards making music changed from 30 years ago?
Maybe when I was younger, I thought it had to be really good, and it had, you know, I didn't want any negative anything surrounding it, or it would, you know, I would give it up. And now I know that if I really mess up when I'm on the stage, or if I drop my guitar like I did last night, it doesn't matter.
Can you say anything about to women who, you know, have their children, and sometimes, mm-hmm. like you say, I feel like sometimes, you know, we put our heads on a shelf, it's just gathering dust, our dreams gather dust, and,
yeah.
you know, because we do get so involved, mm-hmm. and then after the kids are, we sort of go, well, I don't really know what I'm doing and who I am.
I think I was very lucky, because there was so much awaiting me when the children did stop needing me quite so much. When the last one actually walked out of the door, I was completely grief-struck, and the whole thing of empty nest syndrome that I had just thought was just a word, sorry, three words, was a real physical feeling, and it was horrible, and it lasted for about a week.
About a week.
And I was really bowled over by it, by how physical it was. And then it started to fade when I realized how much I wasn't going to have to do. And then you say you put your brain back on the shelf. It's amazing how it is still there.
Okay.
I promise.
Okay. I'm going to blow the dust off a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. But it is an extraordinary thing that actually it's a process that happens, I'm sure. I'm sure I'm not alone in it, but it happens.
That was Vashti Bunyan, and the way you spell her name is V-A-S-H-T-I, Bunyan, like in Paul Bunyan. And I would encourage you to Google her as well, as she did herself about 12 or something years ago, and here she is again. Now we're going to move on. Carol has some guests in the studio for you this evening, and they're going to be speaking about the Northeast Free Health Clinic.
And this is Carol Scholes on KBOO. Let's make sure the mics work. I think we're up. All right, we're good. Thanks, Marlise, for that wonderful interview with Vashti Bunyan. You know, it's a real story in how age doesn't really matter and what you do in life. Here in the studio, I'm so honored to have Rosalind Farrington. She's the clinic coordinator of the North by Northeast Community Health Center. And we have Pastor Mary Overstreet Smith, and she is the visionary who came up with this idea of solving a problem in our community, the lack of health care options, and started our own clinic. It's a wonderful story. And to tell you a little bit more about the health clinic, we have Ros Farrington.
Hi, Carol. Thanks for having us on the show. And I'll just give you a couple of the details about the clinic, and then I'm going to invite Pastor Mary to tell the story because it takes her to tell about the vision of what brought the clinic forward. So the mission of the North by Northeast Community Health Center is to improve the health outcomes in the medically underserved North by Northeast community by offering health screening and basic medical services to adults at no cost. So part of the vision is to have adult people who some are employed, some are not employed, who still can't afford health insurance, to have them come in to be, get their basic medical cover, medical issues covered, and also to do sort of chronic care and ongoing care for people who have high blood pressure, diabetes, and high cholesterol. And I came into this picture in August of this year when I met Dr. Jill and Pastor Mary, but this vision has been about a year in the making. I just want to welcome Pastor Mary Overstreet and invite her to tell us a little bit about it.
Thank you, Roswell, and thank you, Carol, for the invitation this evening. It's good to be here to talk about the North by Northeast Community Health Clinic, which is now open and running, and we are so proud of the fact that it didn't take us X number of years to accomplish what we had in mind. I'm very grateful to the fact that I met Dr. Jill last September when she came to our church, and this was right after the Katrina and the Rita hurricane was in Louisiana. And we had brought, I had called my daughters in where they were working at in another state and told them to quit their jobs. And that's exactly what I told them. I said, quit your jobs, rent some SUVs, go down to the Gulf Coast and bring the people out. I had a home in Arizona. I sold a home in Arizona and used those funds to bring those over 40 families out of the flood area. And my daughters were kind of in shock, but they did what I asked them to do. And but in the process of bringing those people here, I realized that there was no afternoon clinic for adults that was open now in our area, which had gotten past me because I thought that we yet had one in the Northeast area, but we didn't. So I realized we ran into a lot of problems there by not having needed medical attention, and taking the people to the emergency rooms. The rooms were very crowded. So I came up with this bright idea to, I had an office about one block and a half from my church, and people were bringing donations for the victims of the storm. And so that's how I met Dr. Jill. I walked up to Dr. Jill and I said, Dr. Jill, I really, really, really need a defibrillator. So she said, what do you want that for? I said, well, because I'm planning on sending a bus down to the Gulf Coast, another bus down to the Gulf Coast, and some trucks and pick up some more people. And we wanted to have this medical bus. And so I asked her, what does she think about opening a clinic? She said, oh, I think about it, you know. So she left, and I didn't have a key to show her the place, but in the meeting where she left, the key came up. So I called, and she turned around and came back, and I said, come on, walk with me. Walked her down the street, showed her the building that was a place that we use in the evening time for children to help them on computers and stuff like that. It was my office. So she looked at the place and said, oh, well, it has possibilities. So I said, well, I would like to make a clinic. She said, well, call me. You know, I'm there talking to her. I don't want to call her. I want her to commit to say, yes, she'll help. So she said, well, I'll think about it. And she did. And from this, we began to kind of formulate, talk about it, move my stuff out of the office, move it down to the church and clear out the building, tear out the walls because it was a bakery in there also. And we began to work and began to contact people because I really, really wanted to have medical assistance for people that could not really afford it. The people we brought in couldn't afford it. They had nothing when we brought them in. So a lot of people, we raised funds to pay their bills when we took them to the emergency room and took them to doctor's offices. And from that, we just struggled, called people, talked to people, got meetings together, and Dr. Jill was just and they're just working like a little bee. She was doing all that she could do. I know she was overwhelmed. She didn't know what to say. But in the process, we were able to get meetings together and talk to people, get the building together, and because most people thought that we were out of our minds, thinking that we could put this together with no funds. I think I probably had about $3,200 set aside, which took that to tear little partitions out of the building. But in the process of doing what we were doing, I think people, I don't know whether they felt sorry for us or to think that, you know, that we were really kind of cuckoo a little bit or whatever, because of taking on such a venture with really no funds and really nobody backing us, per se. But I just felt like there were so many people that had been cut off of medical that year and the year prior to that. And I felt like if we could go in, if we could do something, we could help out. If it wasn't but 20 people a week, it would be 20 people that would be helped. And I felt like that what I had been blessed to achieve, that if I felt like I could do it, put our forces together, we could get the job done.
So how long was it when you first had the idea, or when you first talked to Dr. Jill and opened the clinic? How much time was that?
Well, I talked to her in September, assessment. I went down to Texas right after that. We began the meetings in 2 months. We were in meetings. We were calling people together, having meetings, mm-hmm. telling them about what our ideas were and what we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we began for less than 2 months. We were working it.
Uh-huh. So that clinic actually opened less than a year.
Less than a year, yes.
Right. A fully operating clinic.
Yes.
A free clinic.
Yeah, we opened on August 17th, 2006.
We cut the ribbon on August 17th. And it was such a glorious occasion, because right now I still can't believe it. You know, it happened so fast.
Yeah.
Everything just fell in place.
Yeah. It's so inspiring. I was sitting at home this week thinking, I have this malaise. I need to do some extra work in my life, that sort of thing. I think a lot of people feel that way, and yet you had the gumption to think, I'm going to open up a clinic, and less than a year, that clinic is open and operating and seeing people.
Well, you know, that's because of the majority of the people in Portland are open. They're concerned about other people's welfare. All of them are not self-centered. They're not selfish, and a lot of them are not cynical. And I feel that many times when you venture out into something, if you portray enough fortitude to just push the idea, and you're really adamant about it, somebody else can jump on board. Because even though you might be the one that pursued it, it's someone else that has the same idea. But at that time, they probably don't feel like that they have enough people with them to pursue it. I feel like I don't need a whole lot of people with me to pursue something. if it comes to mind and it presses up on me very hard, and I'm very sincere about it, and I have that really, really feeling that it's time to do it then, and it'll work. But if I hesitate, it won't work. I have to do it when the unction is there.
And if you just tuned in, we are talking to Pastor Mary Overstreet, and she is a visionary who started a free, in less than a year, a free clinic in North and Northeast Portland. And we also have in the studio Rosalind Farrington, who is the clinical coordinator. And again, it's a great story. And Russ, do you want to talk a little bit about the clinic and how it operates?
I will. I'm going to give you the address of the clinic. It's 4725 North Williams Avenue. We are open on Thursday nights right now. We start checking patients in at 5:30, and we see patients through 8:30. We have two doctors and two nurses, and all of our medical staff are volunteers. So that's really important to note, that these are people who are willing to give of their time every week to come out and help folks. And as folks come into the clinic, you know, they're just really grateful that we're there to provide that service. So we have doctors, we have nurses, we have a social worker who's there also to help people with other resources, other community resources that they might need once they're seen by the doctors. And what we're looking for is more clinicians. So we're looking for more physicians' assistants, and more nurse practitioners to volunteer. Because what we're asking folks to do is to do one night a month. And, you know, and our goal is to be open on Thursday nights and Monday nights also. And so if we have a volunteer staff fully of about 60, we can do that. And that's just a four-hour shift one night a month. And we're looking for about 20 doctors, 20 nurses, and about 10 social workers to step up and say, yes, I care enough to, you know, to give one night a week.
And how many people have you served since
the place open and maybe give some idea of some of their problems. And
okay, well, we've seen, we've had 69 visits and probably about 60 patients, with 9 returning. So Legacy Emmanuel has agreed to do blood work for folks, for us. So we send them over there to get blood tests, and then they come back the next week to find out what their results are and what they need to do. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen people who have high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, and a variety of different things. We see people who have sore throats. And so we see people who come in with one-time conditions, but our goal is also to see people, especially people in the neighborhood, who have ongoing care. And the other thing that's unique about this clinic is we not only tell you you have high blood pressure, we help you get your medication. You know, and a lot of for free. So the clinic provides that as part of our service, is to provide, you know, prescriptions for people.
Right.
And what we like to tell people who are interested in making donations to the clinic is a $20 donation will pay for 3 months of high blood pressure medicine for somebody. So it's really reasonable, and your money will go a long way in helping somebody stay out of the emergency room, you know, and those long-term complications that come when this stuff goes untreated.
Again, it's the North by Northeast. I'm going to read the title. North by Northeast Community Health Center, 4725 North Williams. And it's a free clinic started from an idea that's opened up. And the community can come on in and help out, nurses, clinicians, doctors. And we need you to help out. And
so if they're interested in volunteering, they can get a hold of me in two ways. They can call me or they can email me. And the number at the clinic is 503-287-4932. That's 503-287-4932. Or they can email me. And my email is rfarrington, F-A-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N, at nxneclinic.org. And I'm sure that Kate will have that information for you if you want to call in and get it. But we really, you know, we're really just doing good work, and just people are really happy to see us and that we're there. And people are coming from all over the place. They hear about us, they come in, and we're helping people have better lives.
Yeah, again, it's an amazing story. And also, Pastor Mary Overstreet, when you decided the federal government was taking its time helping out people in New Orleans, and you just made a decision to help people out and had those folks up here.
Yeah.
Even before, I think, the...
We did.
Yeah.
We got our group in first. While they was contemplating as to what to do. And
exactly.
People were dying and people were needing assistance. And it just broke my heart just to look at the TV. And I just felt like that we could do something besides just sitting there looking. And if we couldn't help but 5 people, that would be 5 people that would be out of the area. And so I felt like, hey, this was the time to do it. It was an impulse. I did it. It wasn't something I thought out of anything. I just did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I never regretted it. If I had to do it again, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that there were people that were, they were helped. And then the need was so great. And I never will forget Dr. Jill Ginsburg, because I'll forever be indebted to her, because she took me at face value. She just listened to what I said and decided to help, you know. And I'm eternally grateful to her because of her dedication, and she's dedicated to this clinic. She's dedicated to helping the people. And that means a whole lot, because I feel like everybody needs medical attention at some time. And I begin to think, if we only assisted with the medical attention, what about the medication or the x-rays? So I really, really wanted to be able to, when the clinic was open, to be able to pay for those things, you know, for people that did not have, because there are people that cannot afford x-rays, cannot afford prescriptions. And we were blessed through Fred Myers, and things were worked out, you know. So the prescriptions come from Fred Myers, the lab workers at Legacy, and so everything is just working out. And those people are so committed that comes to the clinic, they make sure they come back and get the results of their tests, make sure their medication. We don't have medication laying around people are not picking up. So it's just working out very, very well, because people are, they need the medical attention, you know. Mm-hmm. And this is America, right? So we have to take care of our own.
Exactly.
Right. Figure out.
Especially when people can't get help in any other way.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's the least we can do.
Exactly. And in the 7 weeks that we've been open, we filled 30 prescriptions.
Uh-huh.
So it's just been, you know, it's been remarkable.
Yeah.
And just to speak to Dr. Jill, she is a remarkable human being who really loves people and who really has a heart for service. And she worked for Kaiser, and then Kaiser stepped up also. I stepped up to the plate and donated a lot of the equipment that we're using in the health clinic.
Yes,
Yeah, because when I think of a health clinic or a hospital, anything, I immediately think of tens of thousands of dollars worth of medical stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Kaiser was right there.
So when they walk into the clinic, you're not. It's more than just a table and an empty room. We're talking about real.
Information. It is a credible clinic. It is amazing when you walk in, because I think some people are expecting some things to be kind of obsolete.
Like a tent.
But it's not. It'll blow your mind.
We have exam tables
everything.
And scales and things to look in your ears and your eyes.
Oh, that's great. Are there any other events coming up to help with fundraising, anything like that?
Or? Well, you know, Broadway Books. The Sunday after Thanksgiving, that evening, they are offering a book sale that 15% of their donations are going to go to the clinic. So the Sunday after Thanksgiving, you know, that holiday shopping weekend, that evening, I think it's from 5:30 to 7, if you go into Broadway Books, then a percentage of your purchase will go toward the clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and speaking of fundraising, we're also looking for other businesses who want to step up and do similar projects with us, and people who have fundraising expertise or ideas. We love house parties.
Mm-hmm.
We're willing to come out and do what we need to do to help support people who want to help folks.
And can you mention that again? You said something about like just a $20 donation, what that would go for.
Yeah, like I said before, a $20 donation will cover somebody's medication for 3 months for high blood pressure. Or it'll cover a 3-month prescription.
Yeah. So even when the holidays come, that's a great, you know, to donate a family member's name or something.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That sounds great. And before we close, do you want to go ahead, Russ, and give the contact information again and how to contact you?
Absolutely. So the address for the clinic is 4725 North Williams Avenue. And the phone number for the clinic is 503-287-4932. And the website is www.nxneclinic.org. And then you can reach me at rfarrington@nxneclinic.org.
Great. And we just have a few minutes left. And I'd like Pastor Mary or Russ Farrington, if you want to just say some closing words about the work you're doing.
It's been a joy being here this evening. We appreciate the time and the effort that you all have put forth. And I'm sure that there are people out there that have listened to the information that we've imparted to them this evening are going to come and render some assistance, those doctors, those nurses, and, you know, because it's much needed, and we'd be so grateful for their help and for their attention to the matter. Thank you so much.
And also, just speaking of Katrina survivors, Pastor Mary is still helping those folks.
Yes.
You know, they're still helping those folks. So you can contact Pastor Mary through the clinic also if you want to support, you know, that effort.
Right.
Because, you know, the hurricane is over, but the need is still there.
There. And we also take care of 15 adults from the Katrina area, also in the state of Illinois. I just come back a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
The young adults was put on the streets February 1st because they quit paying their rent, FEMA did. So we stepped in and undergirded them. So we're taking care of 15 of them. We just sent 20 boxes up there for them. So we're yet working with the people in this area also. We just brought a family in from Atlanta last week from the flood area that was stranded down there. So we're yet involved in it, doing what we can do.
Oh, that's great. It's very inspiring. I want to thank you both for coming in on this
Thank you. Thank you.
And good luck with the clinic, and certainly let KBOO listeners know any events that are happening.
Thank you.
I sure will. Thanks for having us, Carol.
This is a special love song for all the young people in the world. Here's hoping someone kind watches over each and every one, because in every young face, no matter how angry or sad, life's a blossom of